what Sandman told them. I don't know one law book from another. Bring down two law books. Well, the next trip, he did bring down two law books for the lawyer's benefit. I must say, one from both coolies on torts. Torts is T-O-R-T-S, meaning in good English, private wrongs. And the other one was a shorthand book. Well, I started to learn shorthand, and I can still write a little of it now. And I learned that book, had a little over 400 pages. I learned it by heart from page number one to the last page. And it was a very, very instructive volume. It dealt a little with almost every subject that lawyers come in contact with. At the same time, there was a lawyer in Rampart named John Dillon who helped me a little. And with this preliminary reading, I went to Fairbanks, where I went to work on Goldstream, took a lay there, and between shifts, I studied law. I got several books from Fairbanks lawyers, and finally, in the fall of 1906, I dared file my application for admission to the bar. Judge Wickersham appointed a committee to examine me. I still remember the names of the committee, but it's probably not necessary.
Yes, it is.
To mention it now. Well, all right. One of them was A.R. Heilig.
I remember him.
And another one was Fernand de Jonnerre, who was a French origin, had practiced law in Canada, and finally come to Fairbanks to engage in the practice of law. And the other one was the same lawyer that I referred to while I was in Rampart, John Dillon. They must have made a favorable report before one day I was advised to appear in open court and take the office which every lawyer is required to take, namely, to support the Constitution of the United States and to take no case in which he doesn't have full faith and in the justice of which, or about the justice of which he has no doubt. Well, I took that oath, and I have tried to follow it as well as I have been able to ever
since.
Over
half a century now, Henry.
Yeah. Well, after that, I engaged in the practice. This man, Dijonnerre, whom I have mentioned, was interested in quite a number of very important mining cases which were then pending in the Fairbanks court. And he had examined me in my examination on mining law. I had studied mining law very particularly, and of course having followed the business of a prospector and a miner for quite a number of years, I was well acquainted with all the details which might come up in the course of a mining case. And a few days after I was admitted to practice, he asked me to associate myself with him, which I did. We formed a sort of a partnership for about 3 years or so, after the time that Judge Wickersham left the bench. And then one nice morning, I was very pleasantly surprised when his secretary came over to my place and told me that Judge Wickersham, having left the bench, wanted to talk to me about business. Myra, being a young and inexperienced lawyer at the time, and to have an opportunity to become associated with the leading man in the territory then, I felt very proud. A partnership was formed between Judge Wickersham, Albert R. Heilig, and myself.
May I interrupt you just a moment, Henry?
Yes?
To inform those of our listeners who may have tuned in late that the voice you are hearing, telling of his early day experiences in Alaska, is that of Henry Roden. Will you please go ahead now, Henry?
Well, perhaps it might interest the public to know that the money we were to take in was to be applied first to the payment of all expenses, and of the balance, I was to get 1/4. Judge Wickersham and Mr. Heilig dividing the balance. That was very satisfactory to me. Soon after that partnership had been formed, Judge Wickersham was elected delegate to Congress to succeed Tom Cale. And of course, he had to spend practically all of his time in Washington.
But the partnership was maintained while he was delegate in the early years?
The partnership was maintained for some time until Mr. Heidick became dissatisfied because, to be frank about it, Judge Wickersham didn't want to throw his salary as delegate into the partnership pot.
Mr. Heidick thought he should.
As Mr. Heidick thought he should. Although Judge Wickersham, whenever he did come to Fairbanks, found it very easy to pick up a few hundred or even $1,000 or $1,500 during the short time he'd spent there. But anyhow, a new partnership was formed then, and that was Wickersham and Roden. That partnership continued until some time after the discoveries were made down in Iditarod. Being somewhat of a wandering disposition, I couldn't resist taking a trip down to Iditarod to a new mining camp. I went down there, and the partnership continued for a couple of years or so until I had an opportunity to become the attorney for the Yukon Gold Company, which was then buying up most of the producing property in and about Iditarod. The Yukon Gold Company was a subsidiary, so to speak, of the Guggenheim interests. And by that time, Judge Wickersham and the Guggenheims had fallen out for reasons which takes a long story to explain. I don't think that the Guggenheims were to blame, and I don't think that Judge Wickersham was to blame. I think politics was about the only reason why the friendship which had existed between the managers of the Alaska Guggenheim interests and Judge Wickersham could not last while he was a member of Congress, and he and I agreed then to dissolve our partnership.
Well, here time has run out on us once more. Henry Roden, in the second chapter of your narrative account of your life in Alaska. And really, I know that my listeners, our listeners, will agree with us that we're having a very rewarding experience. You're telling us matters that have never even been put in the history books. So I think we better have more chapters in this account. And so we'll go on till next week, Henry.
The proceeding came to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Turning up in front talking. We have a club here. Come to the hall. Pretty soon, are also on my milestone. Brings us warm and fuzzy here. And I let them run into the room where we had her before. And I told her we had her all evening until they left her in our charge. So after got her out of this, we took her to the car, went on the car behind her, and got off the car when she got off. I took her right to the gate, the place where she was in service. And we went home. Anything we do, we report. We have one every Wednesday. We're a button with St. John's Ambulance. Once in a while, we have what we call a church parade when we're uniform. I have a photograph of my uniform here. I took one on my trip. Then, I left there on November the 7th. I left from Liverpool. Got to Vancouver, B.C., 24th day of November, 1 month short to the day, my 20th birthday. Well, my dad was in the real estate business around Vancouver, B.C., sir. He took me into his
business. What was your year that you come back from?
1906. So, I was down the waterfront one day. He tried to get me. I guess I went down the waterfront. And I saw somebody from Manchester. Blue funnel boat was in the water. Not the boat. What was that? Just a bunch of. All heavy stuff. £100 sheet tin. Well, that was this particular stuff is sheet tin. Hamburgers out 10 o'clock at night. Just before 10 was one quick. And the man on the other side, one on each side of this bogey. The bogey truck with two wheels. The man at the back, he was guiding it. One of them on each side. And somebody said something, and I turned around to look. And he caught my heel, the wheel did. Made me jump to one side. Now I'm apparently about 2 weeks. My dad got the army at the door. I went into the store. They had several things in the room. I asked them about the wages. I was going to change clothes. And I went home to my dad. He told me to come back down to your farm shore. He said, we're not going to get no wages. And I was going to go over there. So I worked there for a while. Then I worked at the Hastings Sawmill. Finally, the Hastings Sawmill, I saw a job where they wanted man to haul milk in. So I took the job hauling milk from Little Island. I had to go across the Fraser River, row the boat across with empties, and come back with the homework. Morning and evening.
What was the name of that island?
Lulu.
Lulu Island.
On the Fraser River. Yeah. Go back to south Vancouver. Right straight back there. Then across the river. The old bridge there. Both were anchored close to the old bridge. Broken down bridge. So we had a rope, stream a little ways, and then cross over. See? Over the strip. So I did that for a while. Then he put me on the delivery.
Delivering
the milk. Yeah, he went over there to haul it. I guess I made a mistake. take. I guess maybe somebody paid me. Yeah, somebody paid me. I couldn't just remember what was the paid me. I mean, the boss got on the shore, but put me back on the hauling piston. Then I took his kids out to the park one time, to the park. Didn't get back in time to shoot him on account of the kids.
Were you hearing about Alaska at that time? Were you hearing about this country up here?
No, I wasn't thinking about this country up here, but later on I worked around some buildings, and then I signed on, panic was in 1997, I signed on the Empress of Japan for a trip to Japan and China to return, but in part of the winter. Well, we left in March 1908. First stop was Victoria, B.C., then Yokohama, 10 days to Yokohama, then Kobe. The boat was late because the mail was late coming through the Rockies. We have to try and make up this time. It's $500 per day for every day you're over, except one day's grace, carrying mail. So we sent the mail on to Kobe by rail to have to stop at Kobe. That was a 24-hour run. So we went on to Nagasaki. And then at Nagasaki we took on coal, men, women, and children. They have skips alongside, come alongside your ship. On both sides there are two ladders on each, a ladder on each side. And the children at the bottom filling up the skips. They're in skips and baskets. Some fills them up, others back them to the bottom step. Four deep on each step. And once they hit that step, it's just one stream.
They pass them on.
One end to the other.
Like a bucket of fish.
Yes. And then the one on the top just drops the coal down there and lets the empty go down. It just took us 8 hours to coal up. Then we left there, Nagasaki, 2 days run to Shanghai. We stayed outside of Shanghai. I didn't go ashore in any of them places. In Yokohama, they come aboard, want to do your washing, take it ashore and dump it back in 8 hours for 6 inches of garment. But you never offer them the same price that they ask for anything, those that come aboard the ship to sell goods. While we were making the pass, I was in the port watch. And I was part of the garment watch, handles all ropes aft. The port watch handles all ropes part. Make fast. That's the part that comes into port. It's the nose. That's the part.
Yeah.
All right, sir. We make those fast. When we come down, I generally pack a rope down on my shoulder, put the weight tightly underneath the coat of land. And here they are on the deck, all ready to sell their stuff, and also both of their passengers.
They just swarm on the boat.
They come up the gangway, and they are to sell goods. Well, I bought something one time and took it down below in the boat. The order down there for me and sent a wish to put away a rope tidy. I had to come up there. And when I got back down again, whatever this was that I had in my locker in the wall, my wall locker, part of it was gone. The other guy used them up there. I don't remember where it was now. Right this minute. So, Shanghai, I bought 8 o'clock at night. And I was buying something there off of one of them things there. The boss would come along another fleet. My time to go and watch again for night watch to see them while they're unloading. Got to be somebody down that hole to watch it. My duty, I suppose, down ship down there. Anything like a night watch, we put in 2 hours. Well, he comes to me to give me a cloud across the face. I just took one look at him and I hesitated. I was just about to give him one. He's been 21 years old, you know.
Yeah. Pushing you around,
I couldn't go for that. He just moved from Liverpool to take the other man's place at drowned the trip before. He got washed overboard. See, after you pass the inland seas, well, you got the rough weather. You know, of course, after you pass the canal, you can drown people. When you're swapping the deck there, why, you got to stand like this here. Over the room like that, with a lot on it. Yeah. Well, so I just bought some barrels. I went down below, stood up there, and I'd been up all afternoon. See, 4 hours on, 4 hours off. And I hadn't been to bed. So I stood up alongside of a storm shooter. A big fellow singing away, you know. And I'm standing there, and I, as soon as anybody starts to come down, and they shake me. Wake up. So,
I was had a coffee last night.
So these mounted policemen give me hot water and give me something to put on my, made my foot to put on my heel. And the next morning they gave us a lunch to take with us. It's only just 5.5 miles from the Pimento, so we just moved 5.5 miles on that day, but we made it up the next. We stopped at Pimento, had a lunch there, then we went on to Shelter. There, and then the sweet got sick. So he stayed in quite a while the next day, so I stayed with him. And then we left later on the day. To make our two boats. So we next order we got to was called Yoon. And the Nathan was there at Yoon, having a supper. And he decided to stay. Found out later he happened to have sunblock. So we started on for the next one during the night, up there. I think it was Rosewood Creek, somewhere about 1 o'clock in the morning. Next day we left for Stewart. Now we come onto some cabin on that road for Crete where they give us some bay tea. Well, we got into Stewart, 23 miles. Then from Stewart, we started off on the next 23 miles to Wounded Moose. Wounded Moose when this Canadian showed up on the stage. It was called Sunline. Sunline,
yeah.
Yeah, he got the Sunline. He came on the stage. So the Swede left us there and he went up. He went on to the creek. Back to the old creek, to the old Dominion, North Dominion. We were headed for Dawson. So from there we went on to Eureka. Stopped there overnight. Then from Eureka, everybody was sick, so I got out of it. I got into the map. But anyhow, I'm just thinking of a few questions. We got a Skagway, and then we stayed in an empty building all night. And left the next day on the train for White Arch. And we came down and walked the river from the dock, steamer dock. And got to West Dawson, and we went over to Yukon Gold Company's office. Then they sent us out to these camps. Camp. After the corner of King II. where the Pioneer Hall is now. Mm-hmm. So they have people go from the office to my buddy in town in California. Right. So I walked around Dawson. I walked at that camp. There's a two and a quarter a day in, you know, returned back to my Vancouver. Well, the wages in Dawson was $4 a day. Well, there's one man he wanted to quit and get away from there. Tied that up in front, just walk around there all the time, on the pole. Well, later on, let me see. I got the kitchen with a nice baker, I guess. Transferred from Memphis, and borrowed a pipeline camp to Green Ridge. And there was a Green Ridge, there was a ditch there. And then there was some iron pipe where it was steep. You had to have iron pipe, the pressure.
Water to fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So, all right, I